Landowner elk license applications, John and Tom.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, again, Tom Kirschman, Wildlife Division Director. So number 12 in your handbook this afternoon deals with application for license, and specifically, as you just mentioned, Mr. Chair, has to do with elk applications. And so what we have in front of you here, and John will go through the details and the specifics of it here shortly, this is a continuation of a discussion that has been ongoing. And again, this conversation arose after this last elk hunting season again, where we had a couple of units where landowners were not able to draw their landowner preference elk license. And some questions about, in particular, of our ongoing discussions about elk depredation and the number of elk in some key locations and areas where some individual landowners and ranchers are continue to deal with chronic or ongoing elk depredation, some places more than others, and looking at various tools and options to help address some of those concerns. And so based on the pretense of some of those situations, we went back and looked at a couple of things. Number one, and John will go over this, the landowner preference licenses and some of the criteria established in that to be eligible and going for the drawing for that. And then the second part of this will be a discussion about a recommendation about the creation of a landowner-owned land elk license as well. So that's a little bit of the background, and I'm going to turn it over to John Canta, our regional supervisor from Western South Dakota. Him and his staff have had numerous conversations about elk management, elk licenses, very well versed in this particular topic, and he'll go over the details with you on what we have in front of you on your action sheet.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, so like Tom said, two parts to this, and we'll start with the first, which is the 4106-0115, and that's elk application requirements. And we're going to focus on number three there underneath. And really, a lot of the changes that we're recommending to you folks are just to clarify the intent of the rule or kind of clean up some of the language so that it means what it says in our mind out in the field. And that's what's the difficult part here a lot of times with rules is taking those and then implementing them out in the field and some of that gray area and confusion out there when you really start to apply it in the field. So one of the biggest changes that we made here is the 500 elk use days. So in the previous version of the rule, it required that landowners have 500 elk use days or more. And so that's one of those things that in the field, that's really difficult to define, right? So one elk use day on a ranch. And I can tell you that our staff don't stand out on someone's property with a landowner and say, oh, geez, guy, I get 495, but I don't get 500 here. You know, we don't do that. Really what the intent of the rule, we believe, was that a qualifying landowner should demonstrate some elk use on the property. And so one of the recommended changes we have for you is to take that 500 elk use days out and replace it with habitual elk use. So we believe that's it takes some of the gray out, and it simply just says that they have to have elk use on their property. And we define that then as an elk feeding, watering, bedding, or causing damage to private property. In there, we wrote in that that landowner, the qualifying landowner, would need to document that or talk with the department to verify that habitual elk use. So that's one change. The other changes in here have to do with the qualifying property. We have some situations now where some of those properties aren't necessarily being used for agricultural purposes. In those cases, typically it's when we don't have one contiguous tract of 240 acres or more. And so that is one of the requirements that you have to have a minimum of 240 acres or more within an elk unit. And so we've added some language here to help clarify that if you have a 60 over here and 180 over there, that both of those parcels need to be used for agricultural purposes as per the rule. And then also clarified that those tracts of land need to be within an elk season. And so we do have some individuals that have land in two different areas, say out in the prairie and in the Black Hills, which then would fall into two different seasons. So again, just some language in here to help clarify that. And then lastly, having to do with individuals, members of the family of the qualifying landowner operator, there's some gray area in there as to, you know, how far away can that individual's family live, and are they having an active role in that operation of that that ranch or that agricultural purpose on that property. And so we've added some language to just help clarify that those individuals have to have a day-to-day or involvement in the day-to-day operation of that ranch or that property. So that's the first part. The second part, as Tom mentioned, is we're recommending a landowner-owned land opportunity, and this would be similar to what we do with deer right now. We have landowner preference with deer, of course, and then we also offer a landowner-owned land opportunity. And as the name would imply, that's a license that they can get and hunt on their own land. And so the reason we're doing this is in areas right now, as Tom mentioned, where we have a lot of elk damage, we have a lot of elk, to be quite frank, we have individuals, landowners that are not receiving an elk license. So they're putting in for that landowner elk preference, and they're not receiving it. And in these areas where we have a decrease objective, either slightly or substantially decrease objective, we feel that it's a good idea that we make certain that all of those landowners have a tag. And I could tell you from my experience and speaking for, you know, our staff out on the ground, putting a tag in those landowners' pockets when there's elk damage and we're trying to deal with reducing elk numbers and helping out with that situation, it makes that conversation go a little smoother, right? Makes them know that we appreciate them and that we really can't manage elk without their help. And if some of our units, I can tell you that, you know, they're predominantly, if not all, private land. So it's important that, you know, we have good relations there. And having that tag in their pocket helps with those discussions, it helps with those relations, and it helps us address their depredation issues. It makes them more willing to allow, you know, Joe Blow Hunter onto their property and some access opportunity there, and lets them know that we appreciate them again. So just running through quickly that landowner-owned land opportunity, what we're recommending is that they own a minimum of 240 acres in an elk unit. We're going to limit them to one license per year. So if they were to get the landowner preference license, they couldn't put in for landowner-owned land or vice versa. Or if they were to draw one in the regular draw, of course, they couldn't put in for this. It would be a half-price fee, same as we do for the landowner preference license. And then, as I mentioned a moment ago, we'd like to tie this to a decrease objective. So in those units or areas that we have a slightly or substantially decrease objective, this is where we want to offer that. So we want to bring the elk herd down. We don't see any reason that a landowner in that area shouldn't have a tag in their pocket when we're trying to reduce elk numbers. And then lastly, we want to open this up for season dates. So we're suggesting that we start at August 1st and run it all the way through March, so that it is tied to their land. They'll have to harvest that elk on property that they own in that elk unit. And so we want to give them some additional opportunity with that extended season date so that we can ensure some harvest there. I might direct you to the table at the bottom of that recommendation there. And what we did for you is just laid out the current landowner preference license and then the landowner-owned land, just to give you an idea of what some of the likes and differences would be there. And so I'll just point out a couple of the big differences. With a landowner-owned land license, they will not have to demonstrate elk use. So if they want that license and we're in a decrease objective, they'll get it. And again, one license per landowner. And then, again, the big difference would be that we're only offering that in the units with a decrease objective. You could see that a lot of the other things are similar. Half-price license, the season dates, as I mentioned, are different with the landowner-owned land, but otherwise 240 acres and the other things are similar there. So with that, Tom and I would take any questions.
Commissioner Sharp here. Just looking at this, if I decided to buy 1,000 acres out in the hills, And being kind of a naturalist, I want to leave it to just, you know, regular prairie grass and hills and trees and let the wildlife enjoy that property without any agricultural use. I'm not leasing it for grazing or anything else. Would I qualify for one of these licenses as a landowner?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Sharp, and so I just want to clarify, are you referring to the landowner-owned land license or landowner elk preference?
Landowner-owned land.
Okay, so landowner-owned land, yes. In that case, yes, you would, well, wait a minute, because you said you're not going to use it for agricultural purposes, so then no. So, and that's written in statute that the qualifying land has to be used for agricultural purposes, and that includes, of course, livestock and the other more common agricultural uses, but it also includes timber. So we do run into that in the Black Hills, of course, and some of the surrounding areas. But yeah, if it wasn't being used for agricultural purposes, then it wouldn't qualify.
Okay. Yeah, and I just got a problem with that. I mean, a landowner is a landowner, and I don't understand why we have all these different rules for if you own this amount of land, you get to do something. If you don't own this amount of land, you can't. If you own the same amount of land as everybody else, but you use it for something else, you can or you can't. I don't get it. And many times people that own land truly across the state, regardless of the Black Hills, that don't necessarily work the land have a tendency to really take as good as, if not better, care of the wildlife, which then benefits everybody in the area. So I realize that we can't address that right here, but I'm just going to continue to push back on this different use dependent upon, you know, what you're going to do with the land, because the same landowner's paying taxes. He's feeding the same elk, deer, whatever. So, but thank you for that clarification.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Sharp, I share those thoughts. And, you know, the other thing that I would add to that is, particularly in the Black Hills, there's a lot of these bigger chunks being subdivided and developed. And, you know, there's certainly positives to that. But when you look at wildlife habitat and wildlife management, you know, having those bigger tracts certainly is beneficial to wildlife.
Any other questions? Commissioner Locken.
Commissioner Locken here. Do we ever run into a situation where there's feed left out, probably to attract elk use?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Locken, not that I've run into. Most of the time, it's hay that's hasn't been put up yet. A lot of the damage that we run into is you know, just elk out on the grass or on the alfalfa crops prior to harvest. We do have some individuals that will plant food plots for the purposes of deer and elk and other animals to utilize, but I don't believe we run into a situation where they've intentionally, you know, rolled out hay or feed like that just to bring elk in to demonstrate elk use.
Commissioner Locken again. So if somebody planted a food plot and attracted elk in, would they qualify?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Locken, it depends on what they do with it. And we do have individuals that are doing that. You know, they have a chunk of ground and they're planting food plots. But in order for them to qualify, they have to harvest it. And in all cases that I'm aware of, they are harvesting it. So I don't know that we have anybody that's claiming elk use that's planting a crop and then just leaving it for the wildlife. They'll go ahead and harvest it to demonstrate that agricultural use and therefore not just putting it out there just for the wildlife.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Commissioner Spring.
I think on your depredation deal, there's probably more depredation on pastures that are left for spring grazing, and during the winter the elk come in and clean a lot of it up. I know I've been told about it and I've seen it, so that's probably where the depredation is, other than the hay and stuff, but as far as grassland, that's where it is.
Commissioner Sharp.
Commissioner Sharp, your follow-up question, do we do any depredation work with somebody that has over 240 acres that doesn't qualify for an elk tag?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Sharp, these are all great questions. You guys are really trying me here. I'm thinking about it here, and I don't believe so. In every case that I can think of, they're either raising cattle or harvesting crops. Just off the top of my head, I'm not aware of any individuals that wouldn't qualify that we're working with.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Whitmire.
Commissioner Whitmire, one more for you. Specifically in the Northwest, I guess, the prairie elk. I know there are landowners there that probably endure more depredation on their property than others, and I think that's the intent of the landowner preference. I guess if we can, yes, I'm behind this, but moving ahead, if we could kind of track, if those folks as applicants get, or applications get too diluted because we've opened it up to too many landowners being able, I guess if we could follow that to make sure that the right people are getting, kind of that preference, or else we kind of lose the essence of it if it gets, diluted too far. So if we could just kind of watch that, I guess. But otherwise, I like it. Thank you.
Questions or comments? Any effect, do you think, on the number of licenses available to sportsmen because of this change?
Mr. Chairman, I didn't know if Tom had an answer there. He was pulling out papers, but I'll answer it. There certainly is potential. And that's one of the reasons, though, that we linked the landowner-owned land to the decrease objective. So if the objective in those units are to decrease, there should be ample opportunity for all. We're looking to issue out licenses and knock some elk down. And so in those cases, I don't believe so. Now, if we were to expand it out and not link it to that decrease objective, the answer is yes. More of those licenses would be going to landowners. And particularly with any elk licenses, there's a limited number of those. And so as more of those landowners took those licenses, I think we would be looking at less available to the general sport.
Commissioner Beast.
Commissioner Beast here. Landowners get 50% of the tags, so that ain't going to change. The landowner tag that you're proposing on land only is, that does not come out of the pool, does it? So it will not decrease the sportsman's ability to get a tag.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Commissioner Beast? And I wanted to mention Marlon Perkins, that Jim did all the work. Sorry, I just couldn't let that go. Commissioner Beast, you're exactly right. With the way that we have it written, these would be separate from the pool, so they wouldn't come out of that. What I meant by what I said is we would start to consider, and there's a lot of unknowns here, right? We don't know how many landowners will pick up these landowner-owned land licenses and what the success rate will be. We need to take a look at that. So if it is significant, certainly, when we're talking license numbers and what we want to set for license numbers, that could have an impact. But you're exactly right. The way we have this written, it won't come out of the pool.
Commissioner Beast here. So actually, in reverse, it can benefit the sportsman, because if a landowner takes a land-only tag, he ain't in the general pool, so there'll be more licenses available for the sportsman.
Mr. Chair, that's fair to say.
So in all the discussions about depredation and landowners and stuff like that, has there ever been any talk about when a landowner is receiving a payment for depredation for elk, where's the break point where they take a payment and not receive a tag, or receive a tag and don't take a payment? Is there any discussion on that? There's landowners that are taking some pretty significant payments per year. And when is it the point that, you provide for wildlife or you take the payment?
You have three helplines too.
I'll let Tom answer this one.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Commissioner Beast, I don't believe those particular discussions have happened just yet. What has happened, the discussions around the return on investment. And when we talk in areas about the number of licenses we issue, the number of hunters that are obtaining and harvesting elk, and then compare that to the amount of dollars that we're spending on elk depredation in a given geographic area. That's where we started some discussions about, quite honestly, return on investment and where does that direction go. So I think your question folds right into that, and that has to be part of those deliberations. To this point, we don't have an answer to that. We really haven't discussed that, but I can see that moving forward in future discussions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd also add, I just handed that handout to you all up there, and what that is, it's a breakdown from the 2019 hunting season for Black Hills Firearms, Black Hills Archery, and then Prairie Firearm. And what it is, it's a graph to show you, I'll just use the top graph for example. The total licenses are the total number of any elk licenses for that given unit. The orange slash reddish would be the 50% allocation for landowner preference that are set aside, so the number. And then you move on to the gray would be the number of successful landowners that obtained that landowner preference license. And then the fourth bar, the yellowish slash orange colored, be if there were any that were unsuccessful in drawing a license. So maybe the best example would be looking at the top graph for H2, which is one of our most popular elk hunting units. Up in the firearms on the top, there was 250 any elk licenses, so 125 were set aside for landowner preference. And you can see there were only 32 landowner preference applications and licenses allocated and distributed for that unit. In comparison, go to the bottom graph for the Prairie Firearm, and let's just use, for example, 11B. There were 16 any elk licenses issued, so there are made available, so there's 8 set aside for landowner preference. 8 obtained a landowner preference, but then you can see the yellow bar graph of 9 that were unsuccessful in drawing. Those were landowners that put in for the landowner preference. So that's what these graphs are depicting and showing you, just so that you can see across the various seasons and in various units, it's not consistent. So up in the Black Hills, the firearm unit 2 is completely different than a conversation we talk about unit 3 or unit 4, which is more of a private lands unit themselves. So just wanted to explain what that is so you have an understanding of what those graphs mean.
And Mr. Chair, if I could add to that. And so that Prairie unit that Tom uses as an example is a great one to show that unit, Bennett County, would qualify for landowner owned land licenses. It's in a decrease objective, and you can see there we have 9 landowners in 2019 that did not get a license. And so that would be one where those 9 would have the option of picking up this landowner owned land license. And just to let you all know, if we tie it to that decrease objective, as it stands right now with unit objectives in the Black Hills, it would be the southern portion of Unit 3 that would qualify for landowner owned land license, and then Bennett County in the Prairie Elk units that would qualify for it. So if we restrict it to that decrease objective, those would be the 2 units that would qualify for the next season as of now.
So any other questions, comments? Kind of related, and I know it's maybe not directly, but is the issue of 240 acres, because we know from our discussions out there, there'll be one fellow who comes and talks to us and says that's too many and he has fewer and he should get his tag. I'm sure we'll have that discussion when this goes out. And then we've had proposals, it wasn't that long ago, when somebody suggested it should be 1,000 acres. So I guess my question is, and I know it's impossible, so maybe I shouldn't even ask it, but have you talked about the 240 acres again? I mean, we went through a lot of this back with the management plan in 2014. I don't know if we're going to go through it again. But if somebody said, what's the department rationale for having it be 240 acres and above, what would the answer be?
Mr. Chair, because that's what it is. What I can tell you is that it's fluctuated greatly. When this started, and this started back in the 60s, At that time, it was 40 acres, and then it went to 80. It's been as high as 320, which 320 kind of makes sense to me because it's a half section, right? The 240, and that was all a result of, all of these changes are a result of folks coming to us and asking for the changes and the commission changing them over time. So I don't have a great justification for the 240 other than to tell you I don't have a good justification to change it either, because you're exactly right. There's folks out there that would tell us that it needs to be a lot higher. There's plenty of folks out there that would tell us it needs to be a lot lower. And so, yeah, it's a good question where that magic number is.
Commissioner Bees.
Commissioner Bees here. That's a very hard question to answer, as John alluded to, because, I ranch in the Black Hills, and land varies so much in the Black Hills from the interior of the hills to the exterior of the hills. In the middle of the Black Hills, an H2 unit, if you own 130 acres, that's a pretty good chunk of land in that area. And when you talk about homesteading days, everybody thinks, well, you homesteaded a quarter. Not in the Black Hills, you didn't. I mean, there's homesteads that are 80 acres. It just varies so much. And then you get on the exterior of the hills, the ranchers are logically bigger. I mean, so I know people in the Black Hills that owns a quarter or a homestead that have very heavy elk use. They don't have 240. It's agriculture land, and it's used very heavily, but they don't get a tag. Then you have people, I know a person in the Black Hills, a neighbor of mine that's got 400 acres, you'll never see an elk on his property unless it's sprinting across it. They just don't go there. So the guy that has 400 acres that the elk don't stay on, but the other guy's got 130, has heavy elk use, and they don't have an opportunity for a tag. So, I mean, it's such a big variation in the hills. How do you distinguish the acreage thing?
Well, not right, and I mean, we know we're going to hear, because we have ever since I've been there. And I mean, maybe this is impossible, and I'm not proposing it. I'm just asking. I mean, is it at all possible to address what Commissioner Bees is talking about, and saying, well, he didn't have 240 acres. Maybe he's only got 160. But he's got a whole lot of elk use there, so under these rules, he gets a tag. I'm sure that is difficult, and I'm just asking. Yes.
I turn the light on. Thank you, Commissioner Sharp. Kelly Upper, Secretary of Game, Fish, and Parks. Here would be my suggestion with this topic, since this is really just proposal form. We're not into deliberations yet. And we know we're going to get that elk group back reconstituted. Now we have the results from our surveys. We're going to get people back. You're absolutely correct. This will be a topic in there. I can't help it. I mean, I know it will be. And I think Travis went through and did a wonderful job describing the complexity in the Black Hills. So my suggestion, Mr. Chairman, is we charge that group to go back and look at it, because I don't necessarily think it's the department's role to necessarily determine that. I think it's more of a, working with this commission and those producers and the sportsmen of the world, how they want that to look. Because we can manage for it either way you want to do it, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, a good way to do it. And maybe it'll come back and, like, the 240 acres will stay the 240 acres. But on the other hand, maybe there's a way to accommodate what Travis is talking about and the reality of the hills. I don't know, but I know we're going to talk a lot about it. So do we need, should we table it, just leave it, not vote on it? I mean, what, or vote on it and have some meeting in the next 30 days? That doesn't maybe seem quite right, but.
Mr. Chairman, so the proposal in front of you right now is a recommendation for a proposal with finalization in 60 days at the May commission meeting. So
true.
If you would move forward with the proposal, obviously, number one, we're going to receive comment on this, but that would also, during that window, we could pull those people together and have that conversation about the 240 acres and some other pieces of this and get some more input through that process, while at the same time receiving public comment during the open public input period.
Sure.
So I guess our recommendation, if you're comfortable with the recommended proposal here, is to take action on this, move it forward as your proposal, and then over the next 60 days, we'll continue to have discussions and do more homework on this before finalization in May.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So then we'll need a motion to approve the proposal.
Second.
Any more discussion? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, passes as a proposal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So we're at 13, youth waterfowl season. For 14 minutes. One helpline.
Members of the Commission, Secretary Hepler, Chad Switzer, Wildlife Program Administrator, for those listening. It's fun to see Kant in the hot seat. I like
yeah.
that. On page 13, a youth waterfowl hunting season. This was a recommendation we had in front of you here a month or so ago. And to be honest, I think due to some time crunching at a meeting or whatnot, we felt we didn't appropriately go through this recommended change on the adjustment to the eligibility for youth to participate in this season. I can't remember if it didn't make the public notice the correct way, or we just felt we didn't have the proper dialogue at the mic with you as a commission on this. But again, we bring forward a recommended change to modify the eligibility for youth who have not reached the age of 16, that's the current rule, to modify that to the youth who have not reached the age of 18 to participate in this two-day youth waterfowl hunting season. Right now we are a little more restrictive than what we could be. The Fish and Wildlife Service does allow for up to 17 years of age to participate in the youth hunting season. We're more restrictive than that right now, and I don't know if it's always been that way with the service and the federal regulations, but we can increase that age. We think that's the appropriate thing to do in consideration of declining waterfowl hunters and in our R3 efforts, and we think this is the right thing to do. So pretty simple, straightforward. Are there any questions or comments?
Questions, comments? Need a motion to approve? Need a second?
Second.
All, any discussion? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So let me suggest, well, I know we have to stop and have a few minutes to organize for the hearing that's going to be at 2. But we still have another 4 or 5 minutes. Maybe it's not worth trying to address something. Should we just take a break now and then begin at 2? Okay. We'll be in recess till 2.